The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, according to Luke. Someone from the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Jesus said to him, "Man, who appointed me as a judge or referee between you and your brother?" Then Jesus said to them, "Watch out. Guard yourself against all kinds of greed. After all, one's life isn't determined by one's possessions, even when someone is very wealthy." Then he told them a parable. A certain rich man's land produced a bountiful crop. He said to himself, "What will I do? I have no place to store my harvest." Then he thought, "Here's what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. That's where I'll store all my grain and goods. I'll say to myself, 'You have stored up plenty of goods, even enough for several years. Take it easy. Eat, drink, and enjoy yourself.'" But God said to him, "Fool, tonight you will die. Now who will get the things you have prepared for yourself?" This is the way it will be for those who hoard things for themselves and aren't rich toward God. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise be to Christ.
It's Labor Day. What will I do? This question can involve anything from what we want to be when we grow up to deciding whether to go get a cup of coffee at Starbucks. Frankly, I think the first question is a lot simpler than the second. I'm one of those cranky holdouts who the two times a year I've got to go to one of those fancy plant pants places to get coffee, I look at the barista and I say, maybe with a bit of a whine, "Please, all I want is a large cup of coffee." I've noticed that they've trained them not to smirk at people like me. I appreciate that. What will I do? It's Labor Day weekend, so let's talk about our work. Theologically, work, labor, is how we use the abilities and the talents bestowed on us by our creating God. Some work is done without compensation, notably that what we do at home and as when we are volunteers. Sometimes we own the business and we pay ourselves. However, from time immemorial to now, billions of people have been paid by someone else to labor for them. Those with more wealth and power finding others to do as they request or demand. As this system has always had the potential for abuse, Scripture tells us that God's justice requires that workers be rewarded with a decent living wage and that they be paid in a timely way. Having valuable work to do is a precious thing, and it often defines our lives. Again, sometimes paid, sometimes not. People absolutely dedicated to using their abilities are workers that the reading in from Sirach is about. By the way, when we have a reading from Sirach, someone always asks me, "Where is that book in the Bible? I can't find it." It's in the Apocrypha. Books in the Apocrypha are ones that the Episcopal Church teaches are instructive but not doctrinal. We use them occasionally, though, as today. Those hard workers, the carvers, the painters, the smiths and potters, are people who work with their hands and lose sleep in order to get it all done so someone else can have it. They make a city habitable, says Sirach. Modern parallels would include not only them, but construction and garbage workers. I've been in Greece when they've had a garbage strike. You need garbage workers. Plumbers. How many of you want to do that for yourselves? Electricians. And anyone who makes it so we can drive our cars. But Sirach's observation that society needs those workers, society doesn't listen to them. When problems come up in a society, those of wealth, status, and privilege, the ones who are usually chosen for a city council, they don't ask the workers what they think is best for the workers. The powerful listen to the powerful, doing what's best for themselves. That was his observation 2,000 years ago. Have things changed? But still, our work, what we do, shapes our lives in a very real way, daily. Who we are, what we care about, our values and our priorities are all directly connected to what we do. And it is terribly important to us. And here's the hard part. It's terribly important to us, and we work for decades, and then it's over. It's over. The people who love us will miss us, but the world moves on. In three generations, who will remember our personal hard work? Now, this may seem like a downer, but this is an observation that I made while on my sabbatical. On my travels, since May 21st, conservatively speaking, I have traveled over, are you ready for this? Over 20,000 miles, nearly the circumference of the earth. I've been in Cuba, Scotland, England, Greece, Florida, Texas, and most foreign place of all, California. In those miles, I met all sorts and conditions of people, many very different from me. A good number did not speak English. We still managed to communicate. Others supposedly spoke English, but, well, a Glaswegian accent is, you got to pay really close attention when you're listening to someone in Glasgow. In Glasgow, in Scotland, and all over Europe, people live and work and pray day in and day out in cities, towns, offices, homes, and churches that were built centuries before Columbus came to our continent, let alone before the United States became a country. That is a very interesting perspective, isn't it? We're just babies. On the other hand, those same countries have ruins by the dozens. One of my favorite ruins was Dun Castle. It was built in the late 1300s. It was in ruins by the 1800s, still had a good 500-year run. Its claim to fame is that it was the site where Monty Python and the Holy Grail was filmed in 1974. I've learned my news in your general direction, you know. If you haven't seen it, you probably shouldn't. Who actually built it, though? Who put one stone on top of another? No one knows. Someone worked real hard. No one knows who the laborers were. Another one of my favorite places was in England. It was Stonehenge. This fascinating place was first used as a site for rituals beginning over 5,000 years ago, sometime in 3100 BC. People built on it, did things to it, revamped it, used it for 1,500 years. 1,500 years until about 1,600 BC, which was over 3,000 years ago. Gus and I both experienced that place as a place of profound peace. Really, it is a thin place. But even though it was a very important place for a millennium and a half, for whatever they did there as a ritual, it is now a place of tourists and buses and museums and lots of speculation. No one really knows how those who built it did it or how they used it. They have no idea how they dragged those massive stones all over England to put them in this remarkable formation. Who did it? No one knows. What we saw in Greece seems almost modern in comparison. One of the oldest sites we visited was the Parthenon. Hordes of workers who, we don't know, built this enormous temple to Athena. It's massive. And they did it in 10 years. 10 years. They finished it in 438 BC, and it was intact for 2,125 years. It began as a temple to Athena. Christians converted to a church in the 500s. The Turks turned it into a mosque in the late 1400s. Again, America still hasn't even been really discovered yet. And the Italians turned it into a jigsaw puzzle in 1867 during a war with the Turk. In 1975, nearly 300 years after it was blown to bits, the Greeks began to put the pieces of the puzzle back together. They'd been working on that puzzle for longer than it took to build it. Besides letting you know some of the places I visited during the amazing sabbatical that this incredible parish so wonderfully supported, I'm making the observation we need to ask, what will I do? What will I do? What will I do with my one wild and precious life? Almost all of us will need to work, to labor. We will need to work really hard, and yet no matter how fantastic our work is, what we each do individually or even as a culture just won't last very long. Not on a scale of eternity, because we don't last very long in this place. Only God and God's work is eternal. God's creation will be here long after our mightiest structures have become ruins. The man building those barns for his abundant harvest forgot that. He assumed there would always be a tomorrow. In a way, we have to do that, don't we? Or we'd cower under our beds. He assumed there'd always be a tomorrow for him. He felt just fine. He didn't have any plans to die just now. So thinking only of what he thought he needed and wanted for himself, now and in the future, he hoards his harvest in new barns, never giving a thought to anyone but himself, because he is apparently not connected to anybody else. His friends, his only friends, were his barns, his grain, his money, his stuff. And his stuff will pass to someone else, and someone will fight over it. Someone will fight over our stuff. But the stuff doesn't care. The stuff doesn't care who owns it. It's just stuff. As we've seen, also, stuff disappears, sometimes before our eyes, as with the wildfires this summer in California and in Greece. And sometimes it just molders over the millennia. But stuff doesn't last. When God says to the man, this is the way it will be for those who hoard things for themselves and aren't rich towards God, the point is not that God is angry, but the man will have chosen to give his very life to stuff, to things that just don't last. And when he looks at that from the point of eternity, I think he'll think, what a colossal waste of time. The only thing that is worth our effort is that which is eternal, which lasts. God's eternal work is giving. God's eternal work is bestowing grace on all creation in order to reclaim it. Jesus embodied God's grace in his work of healing, respecting, welcoming, listening, loving, all summed up in two laws, the laws of loving our neighbor as ourselves, and one I think we should all have stamped on our mirrors every morning so we see it, doing to others as we would have them do to us. Seeking justice for all, even when those others are very different from us. Jesus' work of grace, of doing the Father's will on earth as it is in heaven, is the foundation of the good news, the gospel, that in giving his life for the life of the world, Christ is saving the world, all people, you, me, and those who are oh so different from us. Jesus' work of grace was very difficult for him. In fact, it cost him his life. Even so, Paul tells us that that is the best way to spend our lives. The best way to spend our lives is to do our level best to live a life that builds on the foundation of Jesus' grace. Our Creator has already given us everything, food and drink, gifts, talents, abilities, his very life that abides in us to do our work. What then will we do? Will we be fools and build barns for somebody else to fight over? Or will we be rewarded by our eternal God by doing the work of grace? I have it on good authority that this reward will not be wealth or status or privilege, We won't get that for joining Jesus Christ and giving our lives to hard work of grace. But I hear the retirement benefits are out of this world.